Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
When I decided intentionally, that's a big word, right, that I wanted to be an artist, all of that work ethic I poured into my being an artist. Like, it is work. And I don't mean work in like a negative way, but like there, you know, you're gonna sit and do some admin work. You're gonna write your artist talks. You're gonna sit down and you're gonna prepare and you work as hard as if you were working, you know, for a boss, right? So I feel like something that is just putting in the time, putting in the effort, targeting my audience, being willing to listen, asking for what I need, supporting others and being in community with others is really, I think, been a big part of it. You have these small steps and they start to grow into these bigger moments. And every time you're out there, you're meeting someone new, you're making a different connection, someone new sees your work. I mean, it just starts to like, there's a natural sequence to like all this hard work that you're putting in that starts to happen.
Welcome to this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast with Jean Gray Mose. Jean Gray is an artist born and raised in North Carolina. In December of 2002, she received her Bachelor of Fine Arts from Georgia Southern University. Upon earning her Master of Arts in Teaching at Georgia Southern in 2008, she settled back into life at North Carolina, where she currently lives and is an active artist. Jean Gray lovingly calls Raleigh home, and she's been creating artwork and educating the area about art since 2008. Select exhibitions include the Contemporary Art Museum in Raleigh, the North Carolina Museum of Art, Greenhill Gallery, Meredith College, Duke University Hospital, and she has an upcoming show at the Greensboro Project Space in the fall of 2023. Her work has been featured in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Southern Living, and Traditional Home, and her works have been shown regionally as well as internationally. Jean Gray has been a big part of my artist life and journey. She's been a part of the communities that I've been building, and we've been artist mother friends for several years now. So it's just such a delight to welcome you to the podcast, Jean Gray, and have you share more about your life and your artwork. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh my gosh, I'm so honored. Yeah, it's great to be here.
And actually, you were on another episode where we talked about professional practice, but that wasn't a traditional interview. It was a shared conversation with Isadora Stowe and Aprajita. It's time to just put the spotlight on you. So that's what we're doing today. So I would love for you to start by sharing something about your childhood that connects to your life as an artist today. I always want to know if people have always kind of known they've wanted to be an artist. I'm jealous of those people because art kind of found me later, but I'm curious to hear about your path a little bit.
Yeah, happy to talk about it. I would say that I never wanted to be an artist. I've just been an artist. I feel like there's like a constellation of stories that kind of like will show. Like my mother, you know, she says I came out of the womb making. Even in elementary school, I would lock myself in my room and like come out with just like heaps of drawings to give her. I mean, yeah, in kindergarten, my teacher let me have a special art exhibition in elementary school. There was a piece of art of mine that got put into a time capsule.
What?
It's going to be open in like 2050. I mean, there's just all of these like little stories. I have this tiny little book, Disney book that I would draw from. This is like falling apart at the spine from when I was really younger. I had to understand it. In middle school, my mom's friend would pick me up early from school and take me to this woman's house. Her name was Janet Dingledine. I was in the basement of her house and she taught me how to draw perspective. She taught me oil painting. She taught me pastels. And at that age, I was bringing home realistic pastels of my family, you know?
Oh my gosh.
It goes like so far back. And I mean, I could tell more, but that just, that kind of gives you a glimpse and you know, gets us started a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. So, and your childhood was in North Carolina, right?
It was in North Carolina in Greensboro. Yeah.
Okay.
So not far from where I am now.
Okay. And so I think it's a story that many will resonate with, because that influence of art is very much a part of our childhood, because, you know, we're kind of always putting art materials in front of kids. But I think what's interesting is sort of that drive to just make something. Because, you know, I have three kids and my two boys are very much not into art in the way that my daughter is. Like, she is the one who will come out of her room and just have piles of stuff that she made. And I'm like, River, it's beautiful, but what do I do with all this? Like, I'm always like, as a parent, I'm like, what do I do with all this stuff? Like, cause you don't want to throw it away cause they're so proud of it, which that's a whole different conversation. But, you know, I definitely, like I see in her that sort of just drive to make, which not everybody has, you know, and I think that's like really special and beautiful. So you did decide to go to art school for your undergrad. What was that experience like? Were you, you know, just kind of like, I'm just going to go for this thing? Were you thinking you're going to be a teacher? What were you thinking career wise?
Oh my God. This is like such a long story. So, you know, later on, we're going to talk about the work, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about some of the work. And so I guess it's fitting to begin the story here in that, where do I start? So high school, I actually went to like an art school, a boarding school in New York.
You did?
And then I did. We had an art barn. We had an accredited zoo on campus. It was unbelievable. So I had already sort of chosen this artistic path.
Okay.
And then after high school, and my sophomore year in college, I started getting sick. So the story of my chronic illness kind of goes like way back. And that's going to, you know, I guess we'll hear a little bit more about that as I talk about my work in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it began in my college years. And so I don't know if I had the gift of like, this is what I want to do with my life, because at the time I had to take a year and a half off to like figure out, you know, going around the whatever, all around the places to see doctors to figure out what was going on with me. So, mm-hmm. Sort of a different origin story.
Yeah.
sort of, but, I continued to go to school for the arts. And then after that, or during that time, started an artist group with four other people called the Stillmore Roots Group, mm-hmm. where, you know, we're still showing and exhibiting today. And I don't know, there's so much to say here. It's like, what avenue do I go down? But, yeah, I've always chosen art. It's always chosen me. And even after college, I went and did AmeriCorps for a year in Washington State. And I decided to not introduce myself as an artist. Mm. I was like, my identity has always been art. Like, no matter where I've been, that's how people have known me without even me saying that. So like, I'm just going to show up, see if I can like not be an artist for a year and see what happens. And sure enough, like, it just started coming out of me in different ways. And it was like, okay, now it's sort of like it always shows in me. But at that point, it felt like I choose it a little bit. Mm. And that kind of began the journey, I guess.
Amazing. Well, why don't we have you describe your work before we get too much further? Because I do always like this idea of when people are listening, you know, having the visual of your work in mind as they're kind of hearing you talk. So can you talk, and I know your work has transformed throughout the years, like I've even seen that transformation, but definitely describe the work that you're making now, what materials and processes you use, what does it look like, what is some of the function of it, and then we'll talk a little bit more about that journey. We'll come back to that.
Yeah. So I'm currently working on a body of work that's called Woven Strangers. And this body of work has been building, has been with me and shaping itself for probably 4 years. And the pieces in this series are painted abstract. I call them objects because they feel different than the traditional like painter that I used to be, which is like canvas in a frame. Mm-hmm. They're made with maple plywood and they're bound with a waxed bookbinding thread. Each piece has multiple sections that are bound together that suspend kind of in balance with one nail holding it flat to the wall at its fulcrum. Any one piece can be have, you know, two or more separate pieces of wood bound together. So they lean on each other just precisely, kind of suspended and existing, supporting one another. The surfaces of these objects are smooth to the touch and have no trace of brush strokes. They show varying levels of opaque and transparent paint that have been dragged across the surface, sometimes through like certain obstacles that I create for the paint. What remains left on the surface is a stain. And the response is kind of a response to material, to the action of staining, dragging, or whatever it may be. And it responds to the relief or the resistance kind of on the wood or through the obstacle that I left. Depending on how it's hung, there can be like a slight shadow because they're a fourth of an inch thick. So they leave a little bit of, not three-dimensional, but they do feel, I like that shadow.
Yeah.
They often have contrasting color schemes between the pieces that are bound together, but they're still in harmony with one another. And the pieces are intentionally abstracted to the point where the reference is there for my need, but minimalized enough so it allows the viewer to kind of bring their own perspective, experience, and interpretation to it.
Amazing. I don't
know what else.
Look
trying
at
to, like,
you talking about your work so well. So good. Jean Gray, I want you to talk a little bit about the journey from sort of that traditional painter, time in your making life to how you landed on woodworking and sculpture, which is really what I would call you now, as more a sculpture artist. I know a lot of, as you mentioned, the work is still traditionally 2D, but you're ever pushing that boundary, kind of moving towards 3D pieces. I can't help but assume that maybe for some of the same reasons that I have pushed my practice towards fabric and materiality in a way that is much more inclusive of my body and, you know, kind of having this experience of ripping and pulling and cutting, like being drawn to a material practice in that way. I'm just wondering if that's been part of your journey towards moving towards wood rather than kind of this you know, flatter plane that a painter traditionally works on. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So through my life, my work has changed a lot. And I've always struggled with that. Like, is this the wrong thing? And I finally came to this idea of that my work is rooted in this idea of object as vessel, process as catharsis, right? So that's that is where I land. And so like through my life, the work has changed. Like when my kids were in the womb, to think of fertility, to think of growth, I did watercolors on paper that were like hyper realistic, to feel like tradition, to feel like bounty, to feel growth, to like embody all of these feelings. So when this work came about, Woven Strangers, it was directly after I had a double lung transplant in 2019. So this work was directly after that. And so to paint the picture, you know, in May of 2019, I was 90 pounds. I was on full-time oxygen. I had a concentrator in my house with a green tube, like going through the house that the children had to step over. You know, when I left to go outside, I had a cart that I had to pull alongside of me. And, you know, when I was making work then, the work was called 12 to 20, an adult at rest, which is like how many breaths a healthy person takes a minute. And it was imagining like each breath and pulling the breath sort of across these obstacles and what would happen to you as you transformed. And these were on rectangular panels. Now after surgery, and they were actually on wood as well.
And can we just just because you mentioned your kids during that time, you have twins.
And during that are 9 years old right now.
Right. So in 2019, when you were going through this, how old were your kids?
They were, what is that? 4 or 5? What year are we in?
Yeah. Something like that.
Four.
Like you had
5. They were 5.
You kind of gave us this visual of you, you know, through the house and mentioned your kids. And I was like, I want people to know that you had twin babies that were like three or four years old. Yeah.
Who, like, I think that will be incredibly empathetic, beautiful people, and are beautiful people because they were really raised in this like very unique situation. But after surgery, I had freedom again. I could leave the house without all of this stuff. I could sing to my children at night. I could walk with them down the street. I could, like, I was free. I could have had physical movement. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden I could not be boxed in anymore, you know, and it directly was influenced in the work. So it's like, these pieces are not rectangular. They live out on their own, and their own marks, you know, sort of suspended out there. And there's a lot of play there. You asked about my youth. I don't know if you guys remember like the Jacob's Ladder toy.
Yeah.
That, like, folds onto itself and makes that sort of clapping sound.
Yeah.
They're kind of like that. They're really playful. They have a lot of movement. They're super resilient. Mm-hmm. They have this appearance of being really fragile, but they're actually quite strong. And so it was a direct, like, I don't know. I would never have gotten to there on my own. The work I'm making now and where I've been in my life, like, it's a crazy place to be, but it's really exciting because it's so fresh and new, and I can't see the end of this work, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's like a work has a period and then I'm done, but this work, I just love it. So
okay, can we just pause and publicly give a shout out to your donor?
Yes, which, you know, every piece I make is thinking of honoring the two pieces coming together, the two bodies coming together, and yeah,
because like that is, you know, and I've heard you talk about that a little bit more privately, but just, I don't know, just, you know, put organ donor on your card whenever you can donate
organs. Donate life, absolutely.
Like, you know, I think of you whenever I like hear a story of organ donation, because we get to be in each other's lives because of that donor, which is,
I mean, donate life, it becomes sort of a phrase you hear, but I mean, you are literally giving life. Mm-hmm. To someone, you know.
And, do you have the same person donated both lungs? Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I feel just it's important to just like honor that
thank you.
Publicly. And the second thing, just like how resilient you are and how amazing you are. I'm wondering how you had, well, it's like, I almost don't even need to ask this question because of what you just described, all that you've gone through. But I'm like, what gave you the courage to pick up that power saw and just like start cutting away at wood, you know? But then I'm like, well, duh, Kaylin, she just went through lung transplant and, you know, like all these amazing things. But just going from working on watercolors and, you know, to like, I'm just cutting wood and using my power tools and sanding things down. Like you kind of had this really transformative experience between, just the way that your, you know, your body interacted with the work, the materials you were using, the confidence, when you started making that body of work. It's just kind of cool to think about.
Yeah, I feel like I just wanted to blow it out of the water.
Yeah.
On the other side, I just couldn't believe how good it was. I don't even know. I was at end of life stage lung disease, so things were looking pretty grim. So to come out on the other side and be like, I feel amazing. I have all of this. I had no judgment. I had no expectations. I just got in there. And actually, Kelly Shepherd Murray, shout out. She's also our sister. You know, she's, in my mind, the queen of sort of the 100-day challenge. Mm-hmm. I started with the 100-day challenge, and it may have even been when I was in a CRIT group with Barbara Campbell Thomas and working with amazing women like Michelle Landell and Deborah Fassion and, you know, Chris, all these, anyway, just all these beautiful women. When I started just allowing myself to play, and so the piece, you know, had more movement, and then I just couldn't stop. It wasn't even like it was a decision I made. I just started moving in that direction. And, you know, I had always been a painter and had done big paintings. So it's not like, I had some tools to build canvases with. I had you know, used saws before. So it wasn't entirely a brand new, although band saws, I did go to recently this past year, got a grant and went and did this class to learn, you know, am I doing this the right way? I'm sort of self-taught. Like,
yeah,
am I doing woodworking correctly? You know, right. And the answer was yes. And I'm doing fine.
Awesome. Oh, well, we could stop the episode right there. I think that the way you described kind of, you know, having this experience of not being sure if your life was going to continue because of how sick you were to this revitalized, you know, energy to say, fuck it, I'm going to make whatever I want because I am alive, you know, wow.
I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot.
I mean, and just, you know, we have is this moment, you know? So artists, you better make what makes your heart sing, right?
That's right. Don't waste that time.
Right. We do have more to talk about. Jean Grey, I knew this was going to happen. This is why I told you, I only want you to bring up, you know, the stuff with your lung transplant, if you want to, but you know, I knew it was very much a part of your story.
It's very a part of the work right now, so it's hard to not say it, but
yeah. But it's so inspiring, and I just really appreciate you sharing. I want you to talk about what your life looks like right now, a day in your life, just because I think that part of your story is so interesting too. To me, I see you very much engaged in your community. You have, you know, a studio space that's on the ground in your art district. I want to hear a little bit about how you kind of move through the world as an artist, how much time you're spending on your art, like how you're balancing, you know, admin and those types of things. So if you could even talk about a week in your life, but kind of how you navigate, you know, a typical day in the studio or a week in the studio, or, you know, kind of just balancing all the stuff we balance as artists.
Yeah. I mean, I took wearing all the hats with you, right? Yeah. All the things we are balancing. I mean, do you want me to speak to the summer? Because the summer is not reality to
us. I think we all can understand that summer let's talk about normal routine when your kids are in school.
Yeah, we don't want to focus on the manic moments of the in-between, you know, trying to get that email out. But I would say what's beautiful about being an artist is that it's never the same, which is what keeps me and my ADHD mind, you know, intrigued and engaged with the process. But if I was to have, like, you know, if you just describe a perfect day, you know, like I drop my kids at school and I go straight to the studio. And my studio is at Art Space in downtown Raleigh. I have this unbelievable, beautiful space with big windows and wooden floors. And on a good day, I'll be there from 9 to 2 on a good day. And that's, you know, that's the goal. I would say that probably happens 3 to 4 days a week.
Okay.
And then typically Mondays I spend for admin, which is like doing my research on targeting the clients that I think, you know, whether it's interior designers or galleries or spaces that, you know, would like the work, doing research, reaching out to those people, making new contacts, or following up with commissions that I have or consultants projects I'm working on, things like that. And then I didn't talk a little bit about my process, but my process, since I'm an artist mother and I have like, and I've had chronic illness, I very intentionally have sort of like a batch process for my working. Like I have a painting time, I have a sanding time, I have a sawing time, I have a sketching time, I have a puzzling time. You know, they each have, can happen in these like short glimpses of time, and then also still feel that success of having produced something and taken a small step towards a larger thing.
Yeah.
So those happen, those can happen in any, you know, whatever order of operations I'm sort of in, and working on a piece. But I run or started running this thing in maybe it was May called Discourse and Dialogue. So we get together with community members, is open to whoever wants to come. And we're just talking about art world at hand or things that artists are thinking about. And this is just informal to like stoke community, because community is really important to my practice. Another thing that's really important in my practice is, as you know, with the lung transplant being sort of a voice of representation for people who are pre-transplant. Mm-hmm. So I talk to Duke Hospital every 3 months to pre-transplant patients. Big part of my process is like having my work in those spaces. So I just took down plates from Duke Hospital. Monday, I'm taking down some work from Atrium Hospital. I'm also going to be starting working with this. This is so incredible. Oh my God, it's blowing my mind. This this company called Regen Med and Biotech, they're growing organs. So it's like, it's totally, I'm just like, is this real life?
When I'm on the call, like, what are they doing with your artwork?
Yeah, well, it's going to, you know, we're in talks. So workshops or just exhibitions, meeting with some of them on Monday. I think that's fair to share. And then, I don't know. I mean, you just never know. Sometimes it's someone coming in the studio. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's going to visit someone else's studio. Sometimes it's just working, reading, researching, all those things, marketing.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a lot. There's a lot of hats we wear.
So is there a typical day? Is there a typical week? I do try to balance those things, right?
But I like that you have dedicated studio hours, and within those hours, there's a variety of things that happen, it sounds like, but you know, you have that routine of the 9 to 2. Does that structure allow you to be more present with your family than after that time? Or do you feel like the juggle is kind of just always happening?
100%. Like, which has become very clear this summer, because I feel like I've been so scatterbrained, because I was saying earlier, like July was my busiest month. And so I had to get things done, and yet the kids were with me, you know, every other week. I think I did camps. So it made me really manic in that present, and probably super agitated in times where like I didn't need to be. But it's true during the school year, which is where, you know, I get that time. I can leave it at the, leave it in the studio. You know? So, but it's true. It makes me much more present in my life.
So tell me a little bit about your experience of motherhood and how that has influenced your art practice. I'm wondering, because I know on a personal level that you used to homeschool your kids. And so you've gone, like me, we've gone through sort of some similar transitions of, you know, having the babies at home and really starting our art careers during that phase. And then now they're in school, and it's like looking back and how did we ever do that? Like, you know, kind of trying to reconcile. And then now we're in this phase where we're like, we have to have these stronger boundaries and just do like more monotasking. I'm very much in like a, I feel like I used to multitask so much, and now I'm like, no, the best way to do things is to do it one at a time, to be intentional, which you can't always do as an artist mother, of course. But I would say that's the best for my mental health when I'm able to do that. But I'm just curious about your sort of experience of childcare, and you know, how have you built your career up to the point where it is now with 9-year-old kids? You know, your career obviously is older than 9 years, but, you know, I know you've had a lot of growth, particularly in the past couple years after you already have had kids. So do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think you touched on it, is that you just have to be hyper intentional, like no matter what, like, and that intention changes per season. You know, like when my kids were one and a half, I remember just doing calligraphy through Skillshare during their nap time, just to have an outlet. And at that time, I didn't put any pressure on myself to really work. I just needed something to keep, you know, something to keep my hands moving and to kind of reach that sort of like flow state, or whatever you want to call it. It's like being in the studio for me is like meditation, that quiet space where you kind of stop thinking and start working, you know? I think that's just really important for me as an individual. So, you know, when they were babies, it was really small. And then, you know, my story of chronic illness kind of starts intertwining with that story. So, you know, when they were 2 and 3, my husband would put them to bed at night, and I had a drawer that I would pull out that had watercolors and paper in it. And I would have a cup of water, and I would just every night paint for 30 minutes, you know, and like that was enough at that time to keep me going. And then, you know, as they got older, it just changed, like homeschool, COVID, you know, compromised. We hyper intentional about how the day was planned. We were in school from 9 to 12. from 1 to 3 was my time. They had, you know, an hour of independent play. And then they could do an hour of screen. So that gave me 2 good hours in the studio a day. And sometimes I would just stare at a wall.
Mm-hmm. And then other times you're so burnt out from the morning.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Sometimes it would be, you know, just allowing the sediment to, I guess, the things to solidify. So, but yeah. But it was just being intentional, right? Mm-hmm. I think that, like, being a mom has just made me hyper intentional about what I want. It's helped me to ask for the time that I need. Mm-hmm. It's really important to me to, like, allow them to see me strive for what's important to me, to model that for them. And it's helped me to, like, embody that a little bit too, you know? so it's changed. And now, you know, they come and probably, you know, even during homeschool, you know, we would homeschool in the studio. So they'd be working on their works, like, very Montessori style. And I would be working on my work, mm-hmm. you know? So, and now they're getting older and it's just like, now it's easy.
Yep.
Easier.
Easier. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's transformed, but man, it's been magical. I mean, I don't know if you feel this way, like, for such a long time, you see the newness in things like they're seeing. Like, it mm-hmm. makes everything new. It makes everything fresh. And that's really exciting. So, mm-hmm.
absolutely. I think one of the things I've been thinking a lot now in my motherhood journey is just how, when you're in it, you're in it and you can't see beyond it. But yeah. then when you've come through certain phases, you do get to look back and kind of have these moments of like, wow, we did that. And like what we did was beautiful. And I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like, sometimes you're just so overwhelmed. And I think when the kids are really little, especially, like, you know, I always say my magic number is like, once they turn 4, things start to get better.
Yeah. And no, I mean, okay.
Yeah. I just think that just to even have this perspective of my youngest is only 5. So, right. So I'm like a year after that, like, supposed magic number for me, it's like, I can already see the shifts in sort of the regulation that we all have now, the balance that we have. And it's not that what was happening before wasn't good and wonderful, but it's just, it was a lot, like, you know, and I think there's like some healing that's happening now. There's some recovery, there's some self-care that's needed in ways that I was much more just in survival mode before, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, when my kids were born, I feel like I physically, like, separated into 3 beings.
Yes.
I wasn't aware of just my self's needs. I was aware of 3 self's needs, yeah. you know, or three. And then as they've gotten older, they've been able to take back some of those needs that I'm not in charge of their survival as much as I once was. And so it's given me back a lot of, you know, being able to complete my sentences and my
send that email on time.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Yep.
I know it.
Giving me back my wholeness a little bit, you know, because in some ways you're kind of one arm here and one arm there. And
yep. Well, Jean Grey, you've been a big inspiration to me because I always see you kind of plugging in and doing these intentional things to move your career forward. And some of those have been in, you know, some of the things that I've been a part of in community. You know, we reference wearing all the hats and some of the professional practice stuff, Crit Crew. But I would love to hear you just speak a little bit about what you feel like the most influential things that you've done that have really helped your mm-hmm. career grow. I think this is, you know, something that every artist like wants to hear about, but also to remember that there's no magic formula, right? You can't follow these 10 steps and, you know, you're going to do this thing. But I think hearing about it from a holistic way of, you know, it's a journey and this is, you know, there's no guarantee, but also you have to put in the work and you have to put in the investment into your career. So what are some of the things that you feel like you've done that have been really influential for you?
So through this life, I've also been a teacher, 12 years or so. And you know, as a teacher, you're facilitating, you're organizing, you're working from 8 to 4, 8 to 5, coming home at night and doing lesson plans, and you're working so hard. Mm-hmm. And when I decided intentionally, that's a big word, right, here, that I wanted to be an artist, all of that work ethic, I poured into my being an artist, right? Like, it is work. And I don't mean work in like a negative way, but like there, you know, you're going to sit and do some admin work. You're going to write your artist talks. You're going to, you know, you're going to sit down and you're going to prepare and you work as hard as if you were working, you know, for a boss. Right. Mm-hmm. So I feel like something that is just putting in the time, putting in the effort, targeting my audience, being willing to listen, asking for what I need, supporting others and being in community with others has really, I think, been a big part of it. Actually, when I took the wearing all the hats with you and Isadora, there was a really simple exercise that you guys did that just like catapulted me and continues to catapult me, which is just the simple exercise of like, and it wasn't new to you. It's not necessarily a new idea, but like, you know, I have these three goals and within these three goals, these are the five steps I'm going to do every week to get to that goal. Mm-hmm. And then when you clear that goal, you bring in another one and those goals start to get bigger, you know, and then you start to build. It's just like my work. You have these small steps and they start to grow into these bigger moments. And every time you're out there, you're meeting someone new, you're making a different connection. Someone new sees your work. I mean, it just starts to like, there's a natural sequence to like all this hard work that you're putting in that starts to happen, right? Mm-hmm. It's not even, I don't know, it becomes outside of you. It just starts to be this machine that's like, rolling on with all these intentions you've kind of put into it. So it's, there's not like the one thing, it's like all the things, you know, like go to the gallery openings, get in your community, you know, have critiques, have those conversations, like be available. Also just like do the work.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. And I love how you talked about examples of both individual effort and then plugging into community and kind of, you know, utilizing resources that are out there for artists. Cause I do think that is the secret sauce, if there is any secret sauce, because we don't, you know, we can't do it alone, but you also have to do it alone in some ways, right? There always needs to be sort of this push and pull. And, you know, that's one of the things that I love about TTN and the Thrive Together Network that we offer, is that it is this combination of like, here are the tools and the strategies for what you can do on your own, what you have to do on your own. Like, we can't do this work for you, but then also, you know, we're trying to give you a structure. We're trying to give you community. We're trying to give you accountability. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the art residency, because that's coming up super soon. Twice a year on the Thrive Together Network, we offer a virtual art residency that's kind of, again, this balance of like community support and tools, but also DIY. Like, you have to set it up yourself. You have to do it yourself. The program starts August 21st, and it's such a great program for artist caregivers and artist mothers too, because you're not signing up to a residency where you have to pack a bunch of stuff up and go somewhere and figure out childcare. It's more, what do you have to work with? What are the conditions that you can utilize right now and work within? And what are your goals right now? You know, and it's kind of the short-term residency. We do two planning and prep weeks, the last 2 weeks of August, and then the 4 weeks in September are the work weeks. Like, it's like, we're getting in the studio, you know, we have the artists on the network who are sharing about it. So I wanted to hear a little bit about what you were planning to do for the residency, because I know you're going to participate this fall. And I'm also going to participate. What are you dreaming up? What are you thinking you're going to work on?
Yeah. So I've got this experience exhibition coming up in October at UNCG's Greensboro Project Space. And all of my attention is going to be going to this, because there's a lot of pieces kind of to the puzzle. I'm doing a workbook. I'm going to have a 2-day workshop happening. I'm curating a show of 8 artists within the space. There's like 4 spaces within the space. I'm doing a solo show within the space, and then having like workshop space for the community. So my goal is to sort of task out these things that I need to get accomplished and get it done by the end of the residency. Yeah. I've already, you know, a lot of things have already gone into play for this. But as I was saying earlier, like, the name of this experience is The Object is Vessel, Process is Catharsis. So it has artists who I feel like embody this. And then we're going to be doing workshops with the community to make objects of memory or objects of whatever it is that you need to process. So I'm really excited about it. But I do need to be able to like completely focus all my attention on it. So it's a great, it's a great sort of timestamp to say like, okay, I'm in and it's done.
I, that was my spring. So like I mentioned, we do two of these a year, and one in February and one in September. And I had work that was due mid-March for a show in Utah. And that's what I did for the residency. And it was like perfect to kind of follow the plan of the residency to set up like these, you know, goalposts for myself and to literally work through it every week and say, am I here? Like, am I meeting? Am I going to make the deadlines? Am I on track? You know, and just to have that balance of like doing it myself, but also meeting every week at the art and tea sessions for the accountability, seeing what other people are doing. I just love the balance of it. I love that it's lining up like that for you too, where you have a show kind of at the end. And if you guys are interested, you can join Jean Gray and I in the art residency program this fall. You can find out more on our website, artistmotherpodcast.com/art residency, or we'll be linking to it in the show notes to, you know, to let you know how to sign up. And we do offer a discount code for the network membership for artist caregivers. So make sure you find out all of that information. But Jean Gray, that's like the kind of thing that, you know, I'm just so grateful to be in connection with you, to be doing these things together, and we get to follow each other along and support each other, even though, I mean, I've told you before, if I had to move, North Carolina is at the top of my list because the art scene there, and it's more the art community there. Like, I just feel like it's just full of so many rich artists, like doing amazing things and supporting each other in the process. So,
well, I would echo that. Thank you.
And you know, I feel like you and I have been in conversation for so many years, and we're kind of living that, you know, that truth that accountability and community is so important. Like, we help each other's careers advance and move forward. So, I'm just so grateful for you.
Well, ditto. I mean, how many times have I referenced because of this, because of that, you know, it's been supports along the way, which is so important.
Jean Gray, I want you to answer for me how you define success for yourself as an artist before we wrap up. Like, what does success mean to you? Are you living your dream right now? Are you
I'm on my way? I am riding the wave of success. I don't know. There's like financial success. There's, you know, the different varieties of success. I think I'm doing all right right now. I think I'm doing all right.
That's amazing. That's what we want to hear, you know, like I'm the kind of person that I want to hear that people who are in my life, who I admire, are content and are feeling good about their successes and are willing to celebrate it. Like, that's what I wish more women artists in particular would just like be grounded in the accomplishments that they're already doing. Like, the everyday is so much, you know, and it's like, find success and celebrate what you're already doing, because it's a lot, you know.
I do. I think it's just being content.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah, well, we always close with five final questions for everybody to get to know you a little bit better. I would love to know, who is your biggest art crush, and it can be art crush of the moment, because I know everybody struggles with this question.
I'm just going to say two. Both are living women artists right now. One, her name is Andrea Zattel. She runs A to Z West. She is one of the first artists that I heard about that, I don't know, it just changed how I viewed art. I don't even know what to say about it, but I admire her for her practice, her sense of place, material, and space. Love her so much. And then another one, because I'm going to say two, is CJ Hendry. I think that she's someone to aspire to. She's just out there just crushing it. She's just, her attitude, her work ethic, I think as she calls it, her Birkin bag tenacity. She's just, and marketing genius, like gorilla. I think she's now, things are catching on. But at least in the art world, but she's just been crushing it for so long. It's really been cool to watch her success.
Amazing. Okay. What about your favorite place to travel or a dream trip that you'd like to go on?
So, I have not flown in like 6 years. So this weekend I'm flying to New York. It's not a dream thing. That's something I'm excited about because I'm going to be a part of a show by two artist mother people, Deborah Fassione and Sarah Agata. Just got to give them a shout out through Artist Praxis. But I'd like to go to Japan. If you ask my son, it'd be Venezuela. If you ask my daughter, it'd be Mexico. If you ask my husband, it'd be Iceland. And I can get behind all of those. So I'm ready.
Amazing. Well, I hope you have the best weekend in New York, and make sure you give hugs around that table for me, because I know there's going to be a lot of great artist mothers there. What about a book or a film that's been a big inspiration to you?
Oh my gosh. Hands down, No Mud, No Lotus by Thich Nhat Hanh. I always say it wrong. I said it wrong again, but that would be a big one.
Okay. What about your favorite meal?
Indian food, anything that's Indian food.
Me too.
Masala dosa, samosa, all of it. Alu gobi is 100%. It's my favorite.
And who do you want to give a shout out to for supporting you and your work?
I'd like to give a shout out to my grandmother Moss in heaven. Like, this is like on the radio. My parents for their unwavering support. All of the communities throughout the year, my years. I mean, we talk about this as Thrive Together as being supportive, but I only got here because my kindergarten teacher, you know, saw something in me, and because, you know, the women that were my mom's friends opened up their houses and their farms for me to have solo shows in high school and in college. I'm thankful for so many women and men, but mostly the women that have like lifted me up in my life. Mm-hmm. So many to mention. Also thankful for Art Space and the absolutely incredible, rich community here we have in Raleigh. And there are really just too many names to mention. I think that just like feel really lucky to be where I am when I am.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay. And where can people find you? Tell us your Instagram, website. Where are you kind of hanging out and wanting to connect with people?
Yep. www.my4dots.com and JG.4dots on Instagram. You can find me there. Or come see me in Greensboro in October.
Yes. And we'll be linking everything. And again, I just want to share the invitation to join Jean Gray and I this August, next week. Basically, we're starting the Thrive Together Network Artist Residency. It's a really wonderful program for artist caregivers, especially because, as I mentioned, there's a DIY component. It's flexible. You kind of do what you can with what you have, but you use the community support of the Thrive Together Network to get your butt in gear, to have that accountability piece, to have the planning tools, and to get in the studio. You can learn more on our website, artistmotherpodcast.com, but we'll be linking all of the information in the show notes, and we'll have that discount code so you can join at a discounted rate for being an artist caregiver, because we got to support each other, artists out there taking care of kids and doing all the things. Thank you so much for listening. And Jean Gray, thank you so much for being here. I just really appreciate you and your amazing work and the inspiring artist that you are. Thank you.
Well, thank you, I'm sure, from all of us for seeing us, affirming us, and supporting us. So I was happy to be here.
The Artist Mother Podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.